The tension had been mounting between Jesus and the religious leaders lately. It seemed he was determined to break all the well-prescribed rules. He did things like heal on the Sabbath. Even his disciples seemed unconcerned about the regulations regarding purity and what one could and could not do on the days set aside for rest. Now, there was a rumor that Jesus had raised someone from the dead. That just could not be. If this seemingly blatant disregard for long-held practices were not enough, he was now stirring everything up. Raising a man from the dead? The absurdity of this rumor seemed obvious. But there was a crowd that now followed his every move. And the size of the crowd was growing. If this was not nipped in the bud and soon, they would get the attention of the Roman authorities, and that just could not happen. If the Roman authorities got wind of the following this man had, if the Roman authorities heard people refer to him as Messiah, then they would surely come down and destroy everything. So far, everything was under control. The leaders kept the people at bay. The Romans and the Jews could coexist as long as the leaders kept them under control, as long as there was no competition for the emperor. But this man, this Jesus, was causing seismic tremors in the well-controlled landscape the temple leaders had fought so long to maintain. They had to do something, and fast. And so they spread the word that if anyone knew where this Jesus was, to let them know. Caiaphas, the high priest, had even said that it was better that one person should die for the people than to have the whole nation destroyed. The plan was in place. The troublemaker must be dealt with. The problem had to be eradicated, and then life would get back to normal. Jesus, fully aware of the growing tension and the threat he poses, goes to the home of his good friends, Martha and Mary and Lazarus. He feels safe in their company, at least for a short time. Their home is comfortable, and he can stop by for a meal before he has to deal with whatever it is that's going to come. And if the situation is as bad as he thinks, he should spend some time with them while he can. Martha is large and in charge, as always, doing things, being busy. She can't help herself. There's work to be done. And given Mary's history, she knows that if something must be done, she's the only one who's going to do it. Lazarus is there too. We can only wonder what his life must be like at this point. Only days before, he was buried in a tomb, thought to be gone forever. 4 days sleeping with his ancestors. And now he's at the table with his sisters and their guests. We can only imagine what is going through his mind. Martha serves the food, hot from the tureen. Everything is in place. The men are reclining on their mats. The smell of the meal is wafting through the room. They've gathered to enjoy this time together in the company of friends. But one friend is missing. Mary is nowhere in sight. Typical, thinks Martha. would just be like Mary to not only be absent from the kitchen, but to have disappeared altogether. Jesus had to call her out of the house when Lazarus lay dead in the tomb. She is such a lollygag, always dreaming, never there when you need her. Where could she possibly have gone now? And as soon as these old nagging thoughts entered Martha's mind, she saw Mary quietly enter the room. Something was in her hand. What was she up to? Mary proceeded to break the top off of a clay jar of nard. And the minute the top was broken off, the smell of perfume filled that room. And it overtook the air that just moments ago had been infused with the smell of the meal about to be served. Martha was speechless. Mary was doing the unthinkable. She poured the oil on the feet of Jesus and began to wipe it with her hair. The amount of that oil would have cost a year's wages. And letting her hair down in front of the men, that was an act that no decent woman would take part in. But Martha had learned her lesson the last time she complained about Mary to Jesus. So she stood still as a statue and said nothing. After several drawn-out moments, her gaping jaw slowly closed. But she remained still in stunned silence. The exorbitance of Mary's action was not lost on Judas. He was immediately caught by the ridiculous wastefulness of this so-called friend. Unlike Martha, whose mouth was shut by her frozen tongue, Judas felt compelled to comment. He, the financial manager of the group, noted the expense of the perfume that was now forming a muddy, smelly mess around the feet of Jesus. And he suggested that it could have been sold to help the poor. If not for the interjection of the author here that Judas's concern was really not for the poor, but because he was a thief who was known to skim off the top of the coffers himself, if not for that interjection, one might think he had a legitimate question. After all, wasn't Jesus always concerned about the poor, the downtrodden, those who had no means to care for themselves? And here he sits, with a year's worth of income dripping off his feet and soaked into the hair of that woman. And Jesus himself speaks. He doesn't seem the least bit bothered by the overabundance of this gift that Mary has given him. He says, "Leave her alone. She bought it so that she might keep it for the day of my burial. You always have the poor with you, but you do not always have me." Did Mary do that? Did Mary buy that perfume for Jesus' burial? Did she have any foreknowledge that her friend would predecease her? He really was not very old. Granted, he was causing problems. Maybe she had heard the rumors that there was a groundswell of opposition, so much so that some would seek to kill him. Was that what she was thinking about as she made her way into town to buy perfume? It would cost all the money she had saved her entire life? Or was she merely responding to what she saw and knew from this man, this Messiah? Mary understood. Whether she knew that Jesus' short time on earth would soon come to an end or not, she understood abundant love, abundant giving, and she responded in kind. This is the one who had provided an abundant amount of wine at a wedding. The one who had given back life to her brother. The one who had given her life in a new way. Mary understood who he was, what he was, and what he had been saying and doing all along. From her deep understanding of the abundant love of God embodied in this man, who would give his own life, she gave in return. She didn't wait until he was gone. She didn't give in ways that others would understand. She didn't give in a way that earned her respect or standing or the acclaim of her peers or even her family. She gave in the way that he did, in exorbitance, in abundance, out of love. Amen.